week 3 of the You Matter campaign. It's all about suicide prevention. This week, I have a lady by the name of Louisa Zondo, who is the mother of former rapper Ricky Rick. Good morning, Louisa. Thank you so much for being on Impact Radio.
Good morning. Good morning, Vic, and good morning to listeners as well.
Thank you, Louisa, for making...
And thank you for having me.
Thank you for making your time available to chat to us. Before we get started with the questions, I want to just give our listeners a bit of background on your late son and also some background on yourself. Then we'll put all the background into perspective in the questions that are coming up. So let's start with Ricardo, who was born in Durban on the 27th of July, 1987. He's the second eldest of your four sons, Louisa Zondo. Ricky Rick went to several schools during her primary school in various cities, namely Durban, Pietermaritzburg, Cape Town, Johannesburg, until he moved with you and obviously his family to Vienna, Austria. And then he completed grades 6 and 7 there. Ricardo returned to South Africa for high school, where he matriculated at Hilton College. In that same year that he matriculated, he lost his father, and that loss for him was extremely difficult. Several years later, at the age of 26, Ricky Rick fell in love with Bianca Naidu, who later on became his wife, and together with Bianca's 5-year-old son, Jordan, and their son together, Mike, they created a loving family, and Ricardo cherished his family and he loved God. And even as he gained public popularity as an artist, that is, he was also embraced by so many in the public eye. Ricky Rick remained grounded in family. However, unfortunately, on the 23rd of February this year, the hip-hop artist, Ricky Rick, died as a result of suicide at the age of 34. So I'm just painting the picture for some listeners that perhaps didn't know too much about your son, Louisa. And then I also just want to talk about your background. And you yourself in 1992 completed your bar exams and you were admitted as an advocate of the High Court of South Africa. And over the past 28 years, you have served in various NGOs, regulatory institutes and corporate roles. And I'm just going to highlight a few just for time's sake. But your roles do include the current role, for example, as chairperson of the Barlow World Empowerment Foundation Trust, also previously CEO of the Public Protector South Africa in 2016, founding CEO of the South African Human Rights Commission, a deputy executive director of the Constitutional Assembly Secretariat, and many, many more. But I'm just painting this picture, and somebody might be thinking, Bagisa, why are you telling us all this information? And I think it's important to highlight and to mention that, unfortunately, or I don't know how to put this, but suicide does not discriminate. I think that is the message behind this major introduction that I'm chatting to you about today. Would you agree with me, Louisa, on that main opening statement, that it does not discriminate?
Most definitely, suicide happens in various places. There is one feature of it, though, that I seem to be coming to a realization of. The many, many stories that have been shared with me bring up this key element of how devastatingly surprising each incident of suicide would have been for the people close to the person who dies through suicide. Yeah.
In your eulogy, you wrote such a beautiful eulogy for him. I'm just going to take two snippets out of that. Now, I quote from the first extract. You say, "I am thankful for the honor of being your mother. Even in the most troubled and disorientated periods of your life, your essential being still shone through and you honored and loved people. For this, I am deeply thankful." Close quote. The second extract is, and I say open quote, "My Ricky, I am thankful because through your battling with the troubles of this world, including addiction, you taught me lasting lessons I learned the grace of no judgment and openness to loving fully, even where choices made are at a variance with those I preferred, closed quote. Louisa, knowing the struggles that your son had, did he ever talk about suicide with either his wife Bianca or with his three brothers or maybe even with yourself?
Brigitte, Ricardo was a very open person in a way. He spoke. He spoke about the internal pain which seemed to be constantly there for him. He spoke to family, of course, and to friends and others close to him. He spoke about how troubled he was by his inability to make it better for himself and for others. And as a public figure, he shared quite openly about how sadness and a sense of loss and disconnection, the pains of humanity being cruel to each other, the realities of discrimination, of corruption, of poverty, just lack of care, and his sense of almost, and I use it with small letters, powerlessness over this affected him. He talked about his personal trauma and grief, and he highlighted his personal sadness about all this. And he spoke openly with other artists as well about suicidal thoughts, and they shared experiences about this. And of course, Brigitte, even as you, as we reflect on what he may have shared, what does come up for me in particular, and I imagine it may come up for others as well, is the reality that at various points in life, at various times, even for me, there would have been moments where my thoughts would have been as suicidal. But the reality is that when Ricardo passed through suicide, it was a deeply, deeply shattering surprise.
In South Africa. Sorry, please continue, Louisa. Go for it. Yes.
Yeah, no, I was just about just saying that, as I said before, I've had this sense relayed by many who have shared their own stories verbally in communications over social media, but also in the books that they have written, the huge, devastating element of surprise. And for me, I think there are lessons there. There are lessons for all of us.
Louisa, yeah. When it comes to support for people that are feeling suicidal, do you think there's enough in South Africa to help people? I mean, from the one aspect of somebody feeling those thoughts and the other aspect from somebody that's hearing a loved one even talking about that, is there enough that is set up from a support prevention aspect?
I don't think so. I don't think so because it is not a subject that has been centered in the way that it actually needs to be centered, because it's a matter of life, really. I would have said generally life and death, but it's a matter of how we enable life to happen and life to be meaningful and life to be connected. And so, no, I do not think we have enough. I do not think we speak enough. I do not think we have enough awareness. I do not think we have enough commitment to build a society that centers mental health and well-being as the rallying architecture of everything that is in society. I often sit down and ponder the idea, what would it look like if in our society mental health and well-being for all was the central architecture of everything? We built everything around that. Where we would apply all mechanisms, all ways of being, whether they are known, whether they are ancient, whether they are just emerging for us in all our practices, be it in schools, in community centers, in community clinics, in places of worship, in places of work, where we do our sports, in our sporting clubs and other connections of arts and culture, where people gather, where we center this building of strong mental health and connection as human beings, such that we are well, we are provided for, and we feel safe and connected to others at all time. We feel our ability to cope with what may be troubling us from time to time is there, and that we know who we are, we understand who we are beyond what may be troubling. We feel our ability to make a difference in life, to be able to influence the course of things in life, what they call agency. We feel we have agency over what is happening over our lives, and that the ability to exercise agency, our ability leads to that place where we are resilient, where we have resilience, we can overcome things, we can live with the beauty and the ugly, we can live with the trouble and the joy, we can live with all contradictions in life, and life is meaningful. Sorry, that's a long response, I'm saying we do not have enough. But we have to build it. We have to build it. Yeah.
Exactly, Louisa. Exactly what you're saying. It's not just a matter of saying, no, there isn't enough and nothing gets done. It's about setting up that kind of structure that gives the support for people that are feeling suicidal, and also to help those know how to respond correctly to their loved ones that are having those kind of thoughts. In South Africa, on the other end, there's also very limited support groups and resources for people who are dealing with the loss of a loved one who has committed suicide. How have you managed to find emotional support in a community?
Well, for me, it's been an amazingly enriching experience, if I can call it that. My ability to connect in spiritual circles, in circles of friendship and family has been a hugely grounding circle for me. This has been immensely helpful, one, just from a therapeutic sense, and two, from a constant reminder that nothing remains the same. And I watch how interaction at different points would shift something in me, would change something in me, would give me a strength and then almost a tool to walk with something that I imagined I just can't deal with. And the change will happen. Talking to people, sharing a smile with somebody out of the blue would just almost be like an awakening that is deep in me and just gives light and hope that we move forward, that it's not everything, you know, there is a lot and a lot more beyond the pain and the grief and the continued suffering that I personally carry, that my family carry, that friends carry around our loss of Ricky.
Louisa, to the listener that knows someone who is suffering from depression or having suicidal thoughts, what is your advice to the listener that knows of that person that is in a mental state that is just not a good space?
It's going to be hard for me to respond to a question in a way that suggests that I'll be giving advice, because for each one, where they are and what they are walking through is probably very, very unique. It's felt in a way that is shaped by what their experience is of life, what their experience of life has done to them. But what I can say is that everybody deserves the opportunity to share with others what they are walking through. Everybody deserves the opportunity to move away from a place where they may be feeling separated, alone. They may be feeling a sense of not understanding what life is for them and not even seeing a path or pathways to joy and meaningfulness in their life. I can only say everybody deserves the opportunity to connect with another in order to begin to make sense of who they are in life, because each and every one of us is precious, precious spirit. We are precious, and we are here because we are connected to others. That is the true state of humanity, being connected to others, being able to give and to draw value from others only because we are this precious spirit, not because of what we have or do not have, what we have done or have not done, what has been done to us, and how it has devastated us, and how it has shaped our inability to connect with the treasure and the preciousness that we are. So for me, it will always be about an attempt to call on the preciousness of the person at the time, irrespective of the trouble that they feel they cannot walk through.
Wow. Louisa, on very well answered, and thank you for your unique and beautiful way of explaining that. It's so amazing how you answered that question, a very difficult question. Before we come to the end of our interview, on a daily basis, you are constantly seeking for opportunities to explore pathways for transforming and healing trauma, and your son's life, Ricardo, has inspired you to pour energy into the establishment of the Ricky Rick Foundation for the promotion of activism. What is the vision of this foundation, and where do you want to see this foundation in 5 years from now?
Yes, Ricky was very, very passionate about helping others. about caring for the young people in particular. He said it through and through. He said he called on us to care for the young people at whatever cost. And so when he passed, he had already started talking to Kumi and I and to Bianca, saying we should actually be looking at setting up something that will take that vision of helping young people, of supporting young people, to a broader and a place of implementation. So the Ricky Rick Foundation for the Promotion of Artivism is the place where we are now and envisaging the spreading of Ricardo's desire to support young people, because it is a foundation which is going to be looking to assist young people in the fields of art and culture, very broadly defined, to make them realize their full potential, helping them through that. And it is going to be building, helping people build that social consciousness, which combines the arts, culture, and the change in the world, bringing about the change that we want in the world. So we call it artivism, combining art, culture, and activism. And mental health is going to be one of the key pillars of focus of the Ricky Rick Foundation for the Promotion of Artivism. Mental health and well-being, working foundation, which is going to be looking to assist young people in the fields of art and culture, very broadly defined, to make them realize their full potential, helping them through that. And it is going to be building, helping people build that social consciousness, which combines the arts, culture, and the change in the world, bringing about the change that we want in the world. So we call it artivism, combining arts, culture, and activism. And mental health is going to be one of the key pillars of focus of the Ricky Rick Foundation for the Promotion of Artivism. Mental health and well-being, working with others to leverage this legacy that Ricardo left for the work which promotes mental health and well-being to be spread to all across divides, so that those living in conditions of limited or no privilege also have access to mental health and well-being, have access to support for their dreams in arts and culture.
Louisa Zondo, thank you so much once again for your time to be talking to us on Impact 103 FM's Morning Drive, and for sharing your pain and reaching out to others while you are at the stage of readjustment and also going through a season of grief. We really appreciate you for being so open about your story and your journey at this stage. And thank you for what you are continually doing on a daily basis for the people of South Africa.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Bikita.